From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and soundbites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
Today, as you've seen and heard from the President and from Corrine, we've completed one of the largest and certainly the most complex exchange in history. And Paul Whelan, Evan Gershkovich, Alsu Kermisheva, and Vladimir Karamurza, three American citizens and one American green card holder, are finally coming home.
White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan earlier today announcing the exchange of prisoners with Russia. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. We'll talk with Ohio Congressman Warren Davidson, a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, in just a moment. We'll also get the latest on the growing crisis in Venezuela, where dictator Nicolas Maduro is refusing to release election data from Sunday's contested election as his government security forces are arresting and detaining election poll watchers and opposition leaders. And in more international news,
these athletes' boxers are entirely eligible. They are women on their passport. They have competed for many years. And I actually think it's not helpful to start stigmatizing people who take part in sport like this.
That was International Olympic Committee spokesman Mark Adams yesterday in Paris defending the new Olympic sport of men beating women. Italy's female boxer Angela Carini questioned the justice of her 46-second boxing match earlier today against a biological male in which she took a pounding. Why is this dangerous charade allowed to happen? We're going to talk with Florida Congressman Greg Stube a little bit later. I mentioned this in passing yesterday. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals issued a ruling in favor of the state of Texas in their battle over the border with the Biden administration. The court overruled previous decisions which had ordered the state of Texas to remove its floating barriers on the border with Mexico. Those barriers can now remain in place pending the outcome of the federal government's litigation against the Lone Star State. We're going to talk with Texas State Representative David Spiller a little bit later. And would you agree that your religious faith matters? What your pastor has to say has an influencing and shaping effect upon your life? Well, we're going to take a look at the faith backgrounds of Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. Christian Post reporter Ryan Foley and chief political analyst for CBN News David Brody will join me later on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com, also encourage you to download the Stand Firm app. Lots of resources on the app as well. Not only can you watch Washington Watch, but you can get our daily devotional, Stand on the Word, and our news feed, the Washington Stand. So go to the App Store and download the Stand Firm app. On Monday, Venezuela's left-leaning president, Nicolas Maduro, announced he had won another six-year term as his country's president following a disputed election marred by widespread irregularities. Well, since then, government security forces have detained poll watchers, and President Maduro, who rose to power as the appointed heir of socialist dictator Hugo Chavez, encouraged Venezuelans to report protesters, to let him know who was protesting the election outcome. Well, that's led to more than 1,000 arrests and at least 16 deaths. Now, due to pressure, President Maduro agreed to an audit of the election results, but what transparency concerns still remain? Joining me now to discuss this, Congressman Warren Davidson. He serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, the Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government. He represents the 8th Congressional District of Ohio. Congressman Davidson, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Always an honor to join you, Tony. Thanks for talking with me tonight.
So let me ask you this. There apparently will be an audit of the Venezuelan election results, but based on what we know of how Venezuela operates, what we've seen thus far since the Sunday election, are we sure that this is going to be a transparent audit?
Well, of course not. I mean, we're not confident we had transparent audits in some of our own states. And the idea that the Maduro administration is going to submit data to the United States or the international community that is somehow going to be trustworthy, I think, you know, you'd be crazy not to have some suspicions about it. So there are a lot of irregularities in the Venezuelan election. And the question is, what are the Venezuelan people doing about it? And they're protesting pretty strongly. Unfortunately, there's a pretty brutal crackdown underway by the Maduro regime.
Do you see any parallels to what we've seen here in the United States?
Well, I mean, certainly not the kind of level of violence that is going on in Venezuela. You know, some people would say that January 6th was some kind of insurrection. It was a peaceful protest. There were people that crossed the line and did inappropriate things. But that's not what's going on in Venezuela. You've got an administration that is literally engaged in a very brutal crackdown, rounding up, opposition influencers and trying to silence opposition before it gets a chance to build. But the protests are strong all over the country. People feel like this election was not an honest election inside Venezuela. And I think that's the thing, is if you're going to go through democratic processes, you have to do the work to make sure that people trust the results. And unfortunately, in our own country, we still have tens of millions of people who don't trust the outcome of whether you're talking 2016 or 2020. Democrats don't want to trust 2016's election. Republicans broadly don't want to trust the 2020 election. And the hope is that we've done the right things and we will have the observers in place in our own country to make sure we have a trustworthy outcome. And maybe Venezuela, if nothing else, will be a caution for our own country to make sure that we have truly auditable results so that if there are questions, they can be scrutinized and proven valid.
What can the Biden administration do? What pressure can they apply to Venezuela? I mean, Venezuela has been, you know, going south very rapidly over the last several years. We have very little contact with them. What can be done?
Well, the Biden administration opened it up. I mean, there was a big limitation on using Venezuelan oil in the United States. And because oil is a commodity around the world, lots of others were coming in and scooping up Venezuelan oil. And this pumped up the Venezuelan economy. And so the Biden administration opened everything up to Venezuela, which made their oil even more accessible. It effectively nullified the sanctions on oil from Venezuela. And frankly, they've provided a relief valve for out-migration from Venezuela. So in a way, they've become allies with Maduro and helping him have cash and also empty out his country of the opposition. So we could reverse those things and limit Venezuela's oil-based economy and make sure that they don't have a way to, purge their country of the opposition.
That sounds very similar to the approach that they've taken with Iran. And the money given to Iran, fueling their economic growth and their ability to fund their proxies that are attacking Israel. It's also what we've seen with Russia in allowing their economy to go forward based on energy. What's driving that?
Well, the Biden administration wants no energy in America, and they know that the country still needs energy. They're working towards banning, internal combustion engines. They want everyone to drive an electric vehicle or share public transportation or something. They say to save the planet, but the reality is it's to have coercion and control over the population. The reality is it's empowering bad governments all over the world and weakening our own economy. So they need to reverse this Green New Deal and, produce more energy in the United States. And, the limitation in particular with Iran, Trump made it very clear, much like we had the Cold War with the Soviet Union. You can either do business with the United States or you can do business with Iran, but you will not have it both ways. And the Biden administration came in and reversed that right away. They flooded Iran with cash. And what does Iran do with it? They target Israel in particular, but they fund proxy groups like Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis, and they destabilize the whole Middle East.
I mean, Congressman Davidson, this would appear quite obvious, but I'm not sure that the vast majority of Americans are connecting the energy policies of this administration with the foreign policies and how that is creating greater global instability.
Yeah, I mean, that's the reality is oil is something that our economy needs. People use it. They didn't like the fact that gas prices were going high and they were taking pressure for it. So they drained our strategic reserve and then they wanted prices to stay low. So they basically turned on spending with other countries, in particular with Iran, with Russia, with Venezuela. And these regimes aren't friends. They're not allies. They're not helping us. In fact, in a lot of ways, they're undermining us and drawing us into conflict around the world. So what do they do with the cash? I mean, in Rand's case in particular, they're very hostile to the United States. In Venezuela's case, they're destabilizing in South and Central America because of the way that they're flooding the border with out-migration from Venezuela.
Congressman Davidson, I want to switch topics for just a moment. Earlier today, a prisoner swap involving seven countries freed the Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich and two other Americans held in Russia. What can you tell us about these negotiations and that resulted in today's exchange?
Well, they were complex, multi-party. They involved Russia and Belarus, Germany, Turkey, helped facilitate things. And you know, we still haven't had all of our questions answered in the Foreign Affairs Committee. But at least Joe Biden did a press conference. I was glad to see him on his feet and in public. And I think the American people kind of needed to see that from the actual president of the United States. And then, you know, it's a good sign. You know, these two men, Paul Whelan and Evan Gershkovich, were, you know, detained in Russia for a long time. I'm glad the Biden administration finally facilitated the release. I hope we did things in a set of good conditions. But you continue to see the Biden administration willing to pay any price, and it doesn't put punishment on people for causing harm to American citizens. So the fear is that you're really raising the bounty on American hostages. But in Russia's case, hopefully we see this as a path to some sort of peaceful dialogue that maybe can create a little more stability than we're seeing in Eastern Europe.
Yeah, I mean, the instability that we're seeing globally right now needs a little bit of tamping down, a little bit of calm brought in. But I want to move to another Biden administration deal. They reached a plea deal with the alleged 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and two other defendants accused of plotting the 2001 terror attacks that allows him to avoid the death penalty. What do we know about this deal?
Well, the de facto sentence has been life in prison because there hasn't been a trial. And you know, there's plenty of evidence. They haven't, for whatever reason, wanted to bring this into court. And you know, the reality is this isn't really a crime. It was an act of war. And so how do we provide a just outcome? You know, even in World War II, there were the Nuremberg trials. So a lot of people and families in particular wanted this trial and they wanted a sense of justice. And by reaching a plea agreement, I think a lot of families feel like they were denied their day in court and a just sentence. And clearly, a lot of people feel the death penalty is the only just sentence for what was done.
Very complex issues that we deal with today. Congressman Warren Davidson, thanks so much for joining us today. Always great to see you, Warren.
Yeah, thank you, Tony.
All right. Congressman Warren Davidson of Ohio. All right, stay tuned, because when we come back, we're going to talk more international issues, but this time sports, the Olympics, where some would say there's a new sport, men beating women. In boxing today, a female boxer went 46 seconds against her male opponent. Stopped, said this is not just. Is it unjust? We're going to talk about that next because you know what? It's coming here to the States today under the new Title IX rewrite of the Biden administration. High school sports, school sports, college sports being invaded by woke policies. Don't go away. We're back after this.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This 3-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch, the website tonyperkins.com. Earlier today at the Paris Olympics, a biological male boxer advanced in the women's division over his female opponent. The fight between Italy's Angela Carini and her Algerian opponent, Iman Khalif, lasted just 46 seconds before the Italian female boxer abandoned the bout, yelling, quote, "This is unjust," end quote. While this competition at the Olympics may seem like a farce, the Biden administration's radical Title IX rewrite is set to take effect today and would impose similar matchups in states throughout the country. Join me now to discuss this, Congressman Greg Stube. He serves on the Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government. He represents Florida's 17th Congressional District, and he introduced legislation to prohibit men from competing in amateur girls and women's sports. Congressman Stube, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, so, I can't hear you.
All right. Well, I'm going to see if we got the sound coming through. Let me, if you can hear me, can you hear me now? All right. We're going to get that technical issue worked out. I want to go back to, all right, Congressman, can you hear me now? All right, he's still not hearing me. Let's see if we can get his audio set up there.
Hey, so you guys can hear me in the back. I can't hear anything Tony's saying.
Okay, he's not hearing
me. I don't hear the program or anything.
But I'm hearing him. All right, so we'll work on that. I want to play this clip again. At the beginning of the show, I played this. This is Mark Adams, who is a spokesman for the International Olympic Committee. Play that clip for us.
These athletes, boxers, are entirely eligible. They are women on their passport. They have competed for many years. And I actually think it's not helpful to start stigmatizing people who take part in sport like this.
Now, I want to make sure you heard what he said. All right. These are women who have women on, they're identified as women on the passports. That's the only qualification now. There used to be a requirement where they would determine that you did not have testosterone, that you were XX or XY and chromosomes, and they could determine. Now it's just what's ever on your passport. And that's easy to change, even in this country. I think we've got Congressman Stube. Greg, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, very good. So let me get your reaction to what we saw in Paris today.
Well, it's so disgusting that we have fallen so far left, not just in America, but in the world, where it's okay that biological men can compete against women in women's sports, and we're going to make all these excuses for it, and we're going to create all these rules for it, and it's just wrong. I mean, the majority of Americans know it's wrong, and you saw on full display today the how upset that female boxer was. She has probably worked her entire life for this moment, and she has to go up against a male who, like the Olympic Committee even admits that he's a male, and as soon as she got hit a couple of times, you know, suddenly she's like, there's no way I can fight this guy. And she's just absolutely devastated. You see that on the clip. And it's just absolutely horrifying that they have, that the left has perverted all types of women's sports, whether it be Olympic sports, whether it be kids in schools, whether it's women that are losing scholarships in Title IX in the United States. They have perverted it. And we now are seeing it on the world stage. And it's really disgusting.
I mean, it's unjust, as Carini said as she stepped out of the ring, but also it's dangerous. I mean, a male punch can carry about 162% more power than that of a woman. I mean, there's a biological difference. I mean, we're playing this charade, and now it's here in the United States. You've tried to stop it. We've tried to see legislation advance, but according to the Biden administration, with their new Title IX rules, this is a dangerous game that they're playing.
Yeah, and they don't care. And they don't care about the other people. They don't care about the safety of women in sports. And they don't care about the fact that there's going to be biological men in your daughter's locker rooms in middle school or in high school or in college. They don't care about that because they are pushing this progressive agenda on the American people. And you saw that with the recent release of Biden's Title IX rules, which flies in the face of why Title IX was created in the first place. Over 50 years ago in the 70s, Title IX was created for women to have an athletic playing field to play each other in sports. It was created for women's sports, and now they're allowing biological men to compete. It's absolutely ridiculous. I hope it enrages every American, and they show up with their feet and they vote against these type of policies, because this is what the left is today, and this is what the current administration pushes on our kids.
Did you see this coming? I mean, this is, I assume, why you teamed up with Coach Tommy Tuberville to introduce the legislation to prohibit men from competing in women's Olympic and amateur sports. I mean, this has gotten out of hand, but, I mean, you started working on this a number of years ago.
Yeah, 5 years ago, there was the quote-unquote Equality Act, that the Democrats call it, that came through the Judiciary Committee, and I filed an amendment to that act to simply define what a woman was and say and protect Title IX sports. Every single Democrat on that committee, this was only like 5 years ago, voted against the amendment, and I said, you know what, let's do this as a standalone bill. Back then, the arguments from the Democrats was, this never happens, you never see that, we're making this up. And we had example after example that was happening then, and now we see it all the time, and now we're seeing it on the world stage, and they want to push this progressive ideology on America, on the world, and it's just wrong. It's frustrating. It's upsetting. Women have come so far on the athletic playing fields to now have such a setback, and it's completely embraced by the left, and this is exactly what they want to push on the American people.
So, Congressman Stubbe, is this a rallying cry? Is this one of those places where I think we can build a broad coalition of individuals, say, you know what, enough is enough of this insanity?
Well, I hope so, because the bill that we had passed the House, obviously, but Chuck Schumer is not going to bring it up in the Senate. I have another bill as it relates to Olympic sports for this very reason that we saw today, and it passed the Judiciary Committee. It has not been heard on the floor. I suspect when we get back in September, you're going to see that bill on the floor. It, again, will pass by party lines. Maybe a couple of Democrats will step out, but no Democrat voted for my Save Women's Sports bill earlier this year. So it's going to be a party line vote, but again, it's going to go and die in the Senate. The only way that we can change this and save women's sport is Trump is president, we flip the Senate, and we keep the House. That's the only way that this is going to happen. Otherwise, you're going to see the Biden administration continue to pass rules like they've done recently on Title IX to allow biological men to compete in women's sports.
Yeah, without question. This has been a top priority for them, along with their whole abortion agenda. Congressman Greg Stubbe, always great to see you. Thanks for taking time to join
us
today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, a victory for the state of Texas in the Fifth Circuit yesterday. We're going to talk about it.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. The website is TonyPerkins.com. And let me encourage you, if you've not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, download the Stand Firm app. Go to the App Store. You not only will get Washington Watch in your pocket, in your purse, wherever you keep your phone, you'll also get our daily devotional, Stand on the Word, and the Washington Stand news feed, along with community. You'll be able to connect with others who are praying for this nation, who are standing for biblical truth in the culture. You can encourage one another. So go to the App Store and download the Stand Firm app. While Vice President Kamala Harris campaigns claiming she was actually tough on border security, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals handed the Biden administration a border defeat this week by reversing a preliminary injunction from a lower court and saying that the state of Texas can maintain a floating river barrier to stem migration on the Mexico border. Now, what does this court victory mean for the state of Texas, and what does this mean to the Biden administration and their lack of enforcement? Joining me now to discuss this, Texas State Representative David Spiller. He represents the 68th District of the state of Texas. Representative Spiller, welcome to Washington Watch. Good to have you back.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate you having me.
So this has been a legal back and forth. What does this court victory mean for the state of Texas?
Well, it's just one more toolbox. And this has been something that the governor, Governor Abbott, has worked very hard at as far as this buoy measure is part of Operation Lone Star. So we appreciate the job that he's done. And I certainly appreciate the job that the Attorney General's office has done in defending this. The claims against it. It's a great win for Texas. And a great win for Texas also means it's a great win for the United States, because we're fighting a good fight down here and trying to secure the border when the Biden administration and our borders are. Kamala Harris has failed and refused to do so.
Now, this, when a court, an appellate court, steps in like this and says that there's a stay, that they will not force the state of Texas to remove these buoys, these barriers on the water, that suggests that the state of Texas has a good chance of winning this case, does it not?
Well, I think so. It's certainly to overturn or to have an injunction, and the district court issued an injunction. We weren't surprised by that. But to do so, they have to meet several requirements. And when you read the opinion, it's a 105-page opinion, which is a lot for it's a lot, period, but it's a lot for a temporary injunction hearing. There are several things for a temporary injunction that have to be met under federal law and under state law. And one of those is the idea that you should there should be a reasonable outcome that you're going to prevail at trial. And number two is that the enforcement of this action will cause irreparable harm. Well, certainly just the opposite is true. Certainly we feel good about where we'd be as far as the ultimate end of the case, but certainly there's no harm to be inflicted. As a matter of fact, the harm is the other way if we don't do something to help secure our borders. So I felt very good about that, and also feel very good about the other cases pending is the one that was my bill was SB4. We had a hearing on April the 3rd in the Fifth Circuit. I was there for that, and I felt very good about that. They haven't ruled on that yet, but I've said all along, I think that they were waiting to rule en banc, which means all of the justices, on the Bowie case before they take up and rule, make the ruling on the SB4 case.
Just for the benefit of our viewers and listeners, explain again that bill that you, that law that you had championed through the legislature.
Right. And that is, that's the bill that that prohibits illegal entry, illegal reentry, and violation of a order to return. So that's the landmark bill that the state legislature passed and Governor Abbott signed into law that says that we're not going to let you come in, at a lawful port of entry. So this bill was going into effect. It's been to the Fifth Circuit, the Supreme Court, back down to the Fifth Circuit, but we anticipate a ruling on that very quickly, very soon. And I anticipate that we'll get the result that we need that says that Texas can go ahead and begin temporary enforcement of that. Again, we're still waiting on a full trial on the merits, but I feel very good about that.
So, Representative Spiller, give us the latest on what's happening on the border. There's been so much other news that's occupied the headlines. I think this kind of, we're still talking about the border, but in terms of the volume of people coming across, the humanitarian crisis, that's kind of slipped out of the headlines.
It's a little bit less, partly, I believe, in fact, because of the efforts that Texas has made and our legislature's made and our governor's made to push back. And so it has been a deterrent. What we're doing is working. It's kind of like the weakest link. They're going to go to California. They're going to go to some other places. So it doesn't alleviate the problem for the country. It helps a little bit for the state. But just because it's not in national headlines as much as it was before doesn't mean that we don't feel it here in Texas. We do see it. We feel it. We feel the financial burden because of it. We feel the burden on our hospitals, our schools, our law enforcement, our jails, all those things, because we're not getting the money that we need to address those issues, among many other problems.
Well, I certainly think that the state of Texas has brought this to the forefront of the debate over the last few years by its efforts, not only in passing the laws, protecting the border, as we're talking about here, but also helping some of these migrants find other states to dwell in. I think that's helped bring the appropriate amount of attention. State Representative Spiller, I want to thank you for joining us. Always great to see you. I appreciate your work there in Texas.
Thank you, Tony. It's always a pleasure. Appreciate you.
All right. This, as we've talked about before, going to be a major issue. It is a major issue, but it's going to be a major issue in the election. And we can imagine, or we can forecast that the Democrats are going to run from this issue because their policies have failed. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about faith and how that shapes one's view when you're a presidential candidate. That's next. You're on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you've not yet downloaded the Stand Firm app, I encourage you to do so. Go to the App Store and download the Stand Firm app. And when you do, be sure and rate it. Give it a 5 stars. Our word for today comes from Psalm 94. O Lord God, to whom vengeance belongs, O God, to whom vengeance belongs, shine forth, rise up, O judge of the earth, render punishment to the proud. Notice the term judge of the earth. The deities or idols of that day, which were just storefronts for demons and demonic principalities, were not universal but confined to a particular people or geographical region. Although Jehovah was God of Israel, his authority was not confined or limited to them. We see repeatedly in the Bible that he is recognized as the judge of all the earth. Continuing in verse 7, it says, "Yet they say, the Lord does not see, nor does the God of Jacob understand." Then the psalmist disturbs their make-believe world with this. Verse 8, "Understand, you senseless among the people, and you fools, when will you be wise? He who planted the ear, shall he not hear? He who formed the eye, shall he not see?" The reality is that God is sovereign. What we choose to think about God does not alter this reality. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, go to frc.org/Bible or simply text the word Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. And join me for a daily devotional every morning. Though it will not be official until the Democratic National Convention in Chicago later this month, Vice President Kamala Harris's ascendance as her party's presumptive nominee has brought a new interest to elements of her background. Recent reports indicate that the vice president called her pastor, the Reverend Amos Brown of the Third Baptist Church in San Francisco, California, before deciding to formally enter the race. Now, what do we know about Reverend Brown and what shaping influence he might have had on the presumptive Democratic nominee? Joining me now to discuss this is Ryan Foley. He's a writer for the Christian Post who recently published an article examining Vice President Harris's pastor and her affiliation with the church. Ryan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's walk through your article on the Reverend Amos Brown of the Third Baptist Church in San Francisco, California. How long has the vice president been associated with this church?
He's been involved with this church for at least 2 decades.
All right, so she's been there for a while. What stood out to you as you did research on the Reverend Brown?
Well, the two main things that I would say stood out to me were only two of the five I wrote about, but he accused Trump of trying to incite a second civil war because after her debate with then Vice President Mike Pence in 2020, he called her this monster that was on the stage with Mike Pence and a communist. So this prompted Amos Brown to write an op-ed for the New York Times saying that his remarks were nothing less than naked racism and misogyny. And then he also said that his description of Harris as a monster was the kind of rhetoric almost designed to start a second civil war. So he wanted an apology from Trump and from Pence. And then the second thing that stood out to me was his comments after the 9/11 terror attacks. He was at a memorial service for victims who lost their lives in the terror attacks in San Francisco, and he was asking a bunch of rhetorical questions basically designed to imply that America kind of deserved it. He was like, America, is there anything you did to set up this climate? What did you do, either intentionally or unintentionally, in the world order in Central America and Africa where bombs are still blasting? So he was also talking about failure to show up at certain global warming conferences and a conference on racism as reasons why the U.S. might have deserved 9/11 terror attacks. And this made people in the audience very upset, including the partner of one of the people who died on the 9/11 terror attacks and two of the big elected officials in California at the time, Senator Dianne Feinstein and Governor Gray Davis, got up and walked out of the speech. And House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who's from San Francisco but was not yet House Speaker, got up there and made remarks of her own. And she was like, the act of terrorism on September 11th put those people outside the order of civilized behavior, and we will not take responsibility for that. So that was her basically rebuking what he said. So even in San Francisco, which is known for being progressive and anti-war, his comments did not sit well.
Interesting. So Ryan, one thing I saw in your article that I thought was of interest was that, and I'm not opposed to this at all, but the pastor Brown has served in various local government positions there in San Francisco. And so the positions that he's taken should be somewhat revealing of what he's been preaching and promoting. And, you know, we can't say that that necessarily transfers to the vice president, but she's clearly being influenced by something. So what positions has he held there in San Francisco?
Well, he was a member of the Board of Supervisors. He was first appointed in 1996, and then he was elected to a full term that lasted from January 1999 to January 2001. He was not reelected for a second term, but he currently serves as the president of the San Francisco branch of the NAACP and serves on the city's African American Reparations Advisory Committee.
I know that back when President Obama was elected, there was concerns about some of the statements that his pastor had made, because we assume that if someone has a pastor that they're sitting under, that they're being taught by, that that's going to influence them. And Jeremiah Wright had made some pretty controversial statements. Do you see any parallels here?
Yeah, I do. That definitely was a big deal 16 years ago when Obama was running for Democrat nomination and for president. He ended up distancing himself from Reverend Wright because he thought that being associated with a guy who, you could say, made some similar remarks after 9/11 would hurt him as he tried to win the presidency. There's no indication that Harris is going to distance herself from Brown, but there are definitely some parallels between what happened 16 years ago and what's happening now, and we'll see how it plays out as the election gets closer.
All right. Ryan Foiler, let me thank you for joining us. Appreciate what you do over there at the Christian Post. We appreciate the Christian Post and the work they do. It's Ryan Foley with the Christian Post. All right, I want to look at the other side of this as well. and that is Donald Trump. You know, what influence have religious, as a pastor, religious leaders had upon his life? So joining me now to look at his faith background is David Brody. He's the chief political analyst for CBN News and the author of The Faith of Donald J. Trump, A Spiritual Biography. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
And Tony, great to see you. Good to be with you.
So let me just start with a couple of questions. I think you may have heard the interview I was just doing with yes. with Ryan regarding comments that Kamala Harris's pastor has made. Does a pastor, does a religious affiliation have an influence on people's lives in terms of shaping the way they see the world and the actions that they take?
Well, there's no doubt about it. I think it's part of the package, if you will. I mean, take Donald Trump, for example. I mean, he and his father and his mother, you know, they grew up under the tutelage, if you will, the pastoral tutelage of Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, which, of course, we know very famous back in the 1950s, one of the most famous Americans to live back then. And if you kind of extrapolate a little bit of what Dr. Norman Vincent Peale was preaching, it was a very much a kind of a feel good gospel, if you will. It was a power positive thinking. That's the big book that he wrote. And he had a great oratory style. So when I talked to Donald Trump about all of this, he says Norman Vincent Peale had a real big influence on him, not to mention Billy Graham. His father, Donald Trump's father, used to take him to some of those Billy Graham revivals in New York. So, there's no doubt that it has an influence even to today as to what we're seeing play out right in front of our eyes.
So David, has Donald Trump had or does he have a pastor? I mean, I've not seen him associated in a consistent or ongoing fashion with a particular church or pastor.
There's no sense that he has a particular pastor that he's there's tutelage under, if you will. You know, I remember, and this is classic Donald Trump. You know, I've known him, going on 15 years now. Our first interview was back in 2011 when he was thinking about running for president, 5 years before he actually did, or 4 years before he actually did. And I asked him about his church attendance and all of that. And he said, you know, I love church. I definitely go to church definitely twice a year on Easter and Sunday. He was proud of it. Now, normally, that's not something you're necessarily proud of, that you go to church twice a year. But with Donald Trump, he was. And you know, it's just kind of interesting how, you know, he saw the world and sees the world. But ever since then, Tony, there's been a lot of people that have been speaking into his life, whether we know about the Evangelical Advisory Board members. You're familiar with them, obviously. And then Paula White and others. And so many folks, as I wrote this book, talked about speaking to him specifically about the Jesus plus nothing. That's the gospel, right? I mean, ultimately, it's Jesus plus nothing and saying the sinner's prayer. I'm told by many that he has done that. Now, a lot of people might scoff at that. Some of it may be lost in translation. And what I mean by that is that he's a New Yorker that has done things a certain way for a very long time. And I think that might be part of why some people might not quite get there when I say things like that, as I report them in the book.
Right. There's a pretty sharp contrast here, is there not, when you look at the two and their faith affiliation. Now, we're looking at the pastor Amos Brown, statements he's made very controversial, clearly kind of the social gospel, but Kamala Harris apparently regularly attends, has been a part of that church for two decades. You know, Donald Trump more of freelancing when it comes to a church and connection with the faith community. And I think that even I've seen some in critiquing your book that said that, you know, Trump's relationship with the evangelicals have been more transactional than really a close affiliation. What would you say to that?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, it's bogus. It's ridiculous that it's transactional. I understand in the sense that what they're saying is he needed evangelical votes to get to the White House, and I guess that's true. But the way Trump sees it, and I've actually spoken to him about this, I mean, what he loves about evangelicals is their passion for, quote, something. And in this case, it's God. It's Jesus Christ, the living Savior. And he loves the passion that evangelicals have. So he has a actual huge respect for the fact that evangelicals put Jesus above everything else in their lives. And so that is an attraction to Donald Trump. And that's really kind of like the DNA of what we're talking about here. But Tony, as you mentioned, I think the choice is pretty obvious here as it relates to what Kamala Harris and before her Barack Obama. It's a social justice gospel rooted in Matthew 25. That's what this is all about. It's right out of the liberal playbook. It talks a lot about compassion, but it doesn't really talk much at all about law and order. And so it's skewed. And by the way, this just in, the social justice gospel is not the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's a liberal political philosophy. And as for Donald Trump, he's more old school. He's traditional. He's more of a kind of a common sense guy who says, you know what? Yeah, the Bible makes sense about a lot of these traditional beliefs. Now, I got to tell you, in the 70s, 80s, 90s, Donald Trump probably wouldn't have subscribed to any of that. But grandfather Trump, someone that's later along in his life, is a different Donald Trump than the playboy of the 70s. It's a bit different. He still has the bombastic style, but he's a grandfather, and it's a little bit different now. He's gone to his old school roots.
David Brody, I want to step back for just a moment, speaking about the two presidential candidates. I want to talk more general, as you've been tracking politics for a long time. What do you see happening as it pertains to, and I've got my opinions, but I'm asking the questions. What do you see happening this fall as it pertains to faith-aligned voters, those who vote based upon their faith, that are engaged because of that? What do you see happening? What's the energy level you see this fall?
Well, I think the energy is extremely high, but it's a different type of energy, and I think we're all trying to kind of figure out the calculus. This is not the George W. Bush evangelical era. It's not the Reagan evangelical era for sure. And it's not even the 2012 kind of McCain, Romney, Obama era of what evangelicals needed to do. This is Donald Trump's party. And what does that mean exactly? Well, the culture war issues have changed, Tony. Abortion, obviously very important. Sadly, the same-sex marriage issue is not as prevalent as it used to be. We're now into all sorts of other crazy stuff, advancing things like, well, we go down the list of the LGBTQI plus, you know, X, Y, and Z agenda. They're into some wild stuff there. But beyond all of that, I believe from a faith perspective, voters, especially evangelicals and pro-life Catholics, are really looking at the weaponization of government that Donald Trump has talked about. Because, Tony, ultimately what's happening in this country is we have lost faith in our public institutions. We've lost faith in our government. We've lost faith in media. We've lost faith in so many different aspects of society that people are questioning everything nowadays. Mm-hmm. Get your tinfoil hat, if you will, at the local Walmart. And I think that's kind of where things are right now, even among evangelicals. Matter of fact, definitely among evangelicals. And so the culture wars of the 80s and 90s are not the culture war issues of today. There is some overlap if you get out right. The Venn diagram. But it's different.
I'll leave that to the vice. I'll leave that to the vice president. David Brody, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us. Always great to see you.
Great to see you. Thanks, Tom.
All right, folks, we are out of time. Thank you for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, you've done everything you can do when you prayed, prepared, and taken your stand. By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.